Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies, where we take a good look at everything guitar, and sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important, so we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. As you can see, we have a full house, both a bunch of people and a bunch of guitars. I'm very honored to have all of my guests. Some of them have been recurring guests, but I want to introduce Frank Stallone. It's really an honor to have you here on the show.
Oh,
it's really cool.
Thank you.
And my very good friends, Sharon and Greg DeLordo. They've been on several times, and Doug is here to help and hiding in the corner. I put him in the corner because he was bad as Ron. So Ron Herbrand. Anyway, tonight we're going to talk. It's been almost to the date, a year since we did our show on the 100th anniversary of Orville Gibson's death. And tonight's topic is basically the legacy of Orville Gibson and moving forward. And we're very, very fortunate. And I want to thank up front Gibson Guitars for letting us borrow a couple of their new guitars, because we want to show Frank's brought some of his guitar, one of his guitars and his mandolin from that are very vintage. And we want to show the legacy, the history of it. But at the same time, we want to show what Gibson's doing, which I think is really exciting, because the guitars coming out of the Gibson factory are really nice and playable. And also joining us to mention that is on Skype from Texas is Dr. Tom Van Hoos, he's written a book called The Super 400, Gibson Super. This is like a Bible on those guitars. And we talked a little bit about that on the last show. But he's here via Skype from Texas, and he bought one of the newer Gibson guitars, an SG, and he's going to tell us about that. And also we're going to get a little bit of an insight of the recent NAMM show in Nashville. He was there, and he got to try out some of the new stuff. So there's some really exciting things happening, and I think it's appropriate because we have this legacy of these great iconic guitars, which are just part of our, at least, at the very least, it's probably global, but is in terms of our American music history, Gibson guitars is a vital part of it. But at the same time, they're doing new things, and there's some new exciting things happen. They're not dead yet. They're still going strong. So anyway, I want to go ahead and open the forum up. Sharon, it's great to have you back on, and Greg, and kind of set up a little bit. For the people that haven't listened to the other show, you can look in the archives for our other show, but go ahead and talk a little bit about Orville, and then we'll get right into it, because there's a lot to cover.
Well, we did. We started a year ago on the 100th anniversary of Orville's death, started commemorating his legacy, and because not much had been done, and he is really one of the greatest unsung heroes, and that cannot be overstated at all. Today, literally today, marks the 101st year that he has been deceased. He mm-hmm. went into guitar heaven. And so we are now going into the second century of his death and his legacy, and where are the guitars? And that's my purpose, that's my mission, is following this man's legacy. And I could not be more excited than I am, and then that I have been since October, when I first read what was happening at Gibson, at the new Gibson, with the introduction and the appointment of J.C. Kerlig as the new CEO of Gibson. And I was very skeptical. I did not look at that article initially and say, oh yes, there's a new guy in town. It's like I read it and kind of like, okay, just put it on the shelf. But I not on the shelf, but in the corner of my desk, and I kept reading it and I read it over and over, and then it started to dawn on me, you know what? They are incorporating the real spirit of Orville Gibson. They are taking what started this company, and I could feel the words lifting off the page, kind of reaching out to me. And so, at NAMM, at Anaheim, January NAMM, I got to meet him and see what they were doing. And I have been following them very closely. And, you know, it could go either way, because there has always been a controversy between, you know, well, actually, the company has always gone in cycles since the beginning, since 1902. The company has gone in cycles of, great years, lean years, a lot bumps on the along the way, and really upswings. And we are in one of those upswings. And I thought that was really appropriate for the 100th anniversary of Orville's death. So it's sort of like it piggybacked onto things that we were already doing. We had the graveside. We had the graveside memorial on, the 100th anniversary. There was the monument in Kalamazoo. So from California to New York, from Michigan to Nashville, from Kalamazoo to Nashville, things were going on. And I think there is, you always think about there's that global spirit. Well, mm-hmm. in this case, it's the spirit of Orville. So I think when you look back at the guitars, and the mandolins, the peak periods, I think now we are in one of those peak periods. And I have my husband, who is just an expert on, all things string. And
sure, he's my number one fan.
And then I had Tom, and going to Nashville, and he was kind of like my eyes. I couldn't be there, and so he confirmed. So it wasn't just like we were jumping on the new Gibson bandwagon just to do it. It is, we have felt, I feel the presence. I've talked to the people. I am really, really excited, and I'm glad that Tom's there to explain what he saw. He just confirms what I felt, and Greg will tell a little more. And part of that legacy are people like Frank. Frank, who's been, he's a collector, he's a player, and what he also has in common with Orville is he's an actor, and Orville did stage work and a lot of comedies and, musical productions. And I wasn't thinking about that. So when Frank came into the picture, I start looking at, I look at everything through the lens of Orville.
I've haunted every guitar shop. I mean, the first time I ever saw the Style O, I remember it was 1958. My mother was taking her out, and there was a guitar store in Philadelphia called Lockers. He was an old German guy, and I went upstairs, and he had this type of stuff. And that's the first time I ever saw one. It just stayed ingrained in my mind, because when you walk, it was a very old place. It had that smell of like an old Gibson case. Yeah. And he had mandolins. He was like a little German guy. He goes, this is $150. $150. Yeah. I mean, I bought my Gibson Explorer. I had a 58 Gibson Explorer. I'll show you a picture of it one day. 1965. I paid $150 for it. Nobody knew what it was. I went to the music store. I said, hey, I worked all summer. I have $150. He goes, yeah, go look at the old stuff. Because no, everyone wanted new stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I went in the back. I said, God, this case kind of looks like a Firebird. The guy goes, I said, what is it? He goes, what, I look like a genius or something? So I go, I think it's cool. So I bought it for $150. Norm told me they sold one, not as nice as mine, for
$600,000.
Oh, they didn't make that many. The case is $10,000.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like on my phone, you know, right here is a picture of me in my, oh, I turned my phone on, my bedroom with the 58 Les Paul. I traded like an amp for it in 1967. And the only reason I found out about Les Pauls, no one knew what Les Pauls were. Love and Spoonful was my favorite group. And John Sebastian, every time he had that little guitar. And I remember reading in the Teen magazine, they said, well, John, what's your prized possession? He goes, well, this Les Paul guitar my father bought me as a kid.
Oh.
And then, man, I swear to God, no one, this is before Jeff Beck was one. This is in 65, 66. And I remember I was in Music City with this Sunburst Les Paul, an old one, 58. And I saw people looking at me. It was just getting bubbling under. People were just getting into them. Like, and again, I sold it for the princely sum in 1970 for $400, which in today's money is like $4,300.
That's right.
And when you're broke and you're starving, that's a lot of money.
No, but what amazes me is you were collecting way. That's a
60, way before.
That's 65. Early. Yeah. Now, I mean, I have one story. My Gibson story is a friend of mine called me up and he said, go to this music store and get this guitar. I'll beat you up. And I went down there and I got a 62 or something Barney Kessel with PAFs for $450.
I had one.
Those days.
I still have it. Yeah.
I still have it. I'll bring it in when
I bought one from Lloyd for like $1,100, like a 60 Barney Kessel. I don't know why I got rid of it. And also he goes, why don't you try this one? It was the first year Johnny Smith. Two pickups, I paid maybe $1,300 for it. Voltage guitars. And for, I don't know what I was thinking. And this is my second, I have a harp guitar. I have two of them.
Right.
And mine, is, which I'm really lucky, they still have the cases, which is really rare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to have a case that's over 100 and some years old.
Yeah, it's hard to find those cases for the harp guitars.
This is that excitement that we're talking about. You know, it's
treasure
comes from the heart, and it goes out, you know, and it goes into our playing. But this is that excitement that these guitars.
So did you hunt the pawn shops in your?
Oh state? Jesus God! I mean,
that was a big thing back then
in Philadelphia. And I was born in more D.C. but my mother got divorced and moved to Philadelphia. Market Street, on these side streets, just was packed with pawn shops. I mean, this is in the '60s. You could guns, guitars, you name it. It was in the pawn shop, and I remember. I bought like an old Tweed Gibson amp for like $40. That came in every week, $5. Yeah. But I saw on the wall. I mean, I can remember it, like L5s and stuff. Seriously, like $185. Yeah. But that was a lot of money in 1965.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you know, Tom Van Hoos will tell you, a Super 400, $400 during the Depression era,
that's a lot of money.
Like $9,000. So I know whoever had my Super 400, because mine's like one of the first years. It was definitely a professional. That wasn't an amateur guitar. Yeah. That was a guy that was probably, I'd love to find out. But Tom, I'm going to get back to you later because I do have what's left, remnants of the serial number of that guitar, but I'm sure it was played by a real big band pro. I mean, that wasn't like an amateur guitar. That was a lot of money back then.
Well, most people that bought those were working.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. No, it's amazing. You were in the golden age. Those early 60s, people didn't know, and that was the time different. To get them. That's I mean, gross. Later
he had
on,
no money.
Later on, people like Clapton and Beck, they hired guys to just go to across the United States and just buy stuff.
Do you know what Norm kept telling me? After Staying Alive came out, I started making a lot of money for the first time in my life. He goes, you know what? Why don't you and your brother come and buy? The Les Pauls are like 5,200, 700, I mean, 1,000, 7,000, 5,000. So I just come by him, and I'm thinking, what a stupido. I could have bought like 10 of them and retired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For like 60 grand, they'd be worth like $2 million. Yeah. But whoever thought a Les Paul would be $300,000,
$200,000?
None of us.
No, you just didn't know. Back then it changed so much.
Yeah.
But so
this is what they bring, this excitement that these guitars come is built into it. But That's what started the tribute when Sharon started to research and saw the what Orville did and what he the magic and the mystique mm-hmm. that these guitars have. So we wanted to do a tribute, and that's where this guitar started. That's what we did here. We brought everything together. This guitar has everything that made the first guitars at Orville. They date back all the way to your Style O. The Style O actually has all these features on it.
Well, Frank, go ahead and grab the Style O so everybody can see it. And
let's
talk about
this.
Style O
was actually the top of the line guitar, wasn't it?
At the top, exactly.
And when this was probably the first cutaway guitar.
Yes, Florentine
cut. And now that had the oval sound hole, but all the features on this got carried over into what's happening was a carved top.
Hold it up for the camera over there. So this is the precursor of the L5. This is before the L5 came out. And this didn't have a truss rod, right?
No truss rod.
But no, it does. This one does. See, it has a truss rod.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is an older one. Yeah.
Is that older? The truss rod was earlier?
That was earlier. So this is 23, most likely. Then.
But, I mean, did they start putting the truss rod in 23, or was it earlier?
Earlier.
Oh, okay.
Well, I hear that.
Yeah.
Sometimes just pick guard. Yeah, they're a little rattly, but.
So you have the elevated pick guard.
Yeah.
The extended tail.
Yeah.
The adjustable bridge, the down pressure, the carved maple. And also, this is the first guitar that has the inlaid Gibson in it, the style.
Yeah, it says the Gibson.
But this is, Greg, this is what I'm interested in. Why did the tail pieces break, or what happened?
They used this trapeze tail, but it had in pins.
Yeah, that's right.
And those weren't very reliable. Okay. So a lot of people changed this. And actually, that's what they use now.
Yeah.
So this has now become a standard. But this was the idea.
Yeah.
But it had pins like a.
Well, anybody listening, if you have an original tail piece, I'll buy it from you. Yeah. I think the bridge is old. I don't think it's an original. But
it's not original. No.
The crossbar, like Greg is pointing out, you had in pins that would actual pins that would hold them in, but they were made of plastic.
Right. Oh, is that what it was?
They would break a lot of times, and that's where the metal ones came from.
Yeah, interesting. You know, it's like a piece of art, though, is really the tailpiece of a Super 400.
That's right.
I mean, it really is a piece of
well designed.
You know, absolutely. Like Tom on my Super 400, which is interesting. I don't know. Because I remember Lloyd had a few of them, but mine has Grover Imperials on it that are very old, and it's got the.
Well, those.
Huh.
Those could have been a factory accessory, because in the old Gibson catalogs, you could order those tuners as an extra add-on.
Okay, because I saw the little engraved ones, the one with like the peapods. You know, they were just. I've seen them like that.
Yeah.
But I have the original tail piece. I bought that guitar from Norm. It was painted black. Oh, God. And it was a big hole in the middle where someone put a Charlie Christian pickup. Mm-hmm. And he sold it to me. But it played good. He sold it to me for so cheap, like $900. I said, well, okay, I'll get it.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah. Taken care of. It got stripped and everything. But the top had been messed with. So when I was playing, the whole top collapsed.
Oh.
So I had Roger Giffen carve me a new top. And but the tailpiece is there. Everything's there. Beautiful maple flames and everything like that.
Let me interrupt for a second. Thomas, are you using a microphone?
I'm using my phone.
You're using your phone because I'm getting you breathing. I'm trying to figure out how to get it so that you're not breathing into it.
I need to move it away from my mouth. Yeah.
Okay, and I can bring you up. Okay, cool. Because it sounds like a windstorm in here.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Frank, show the back of that to the people. Look at this scroll. This wood is just beautiful.
It's really a lot. You know, it's like what you were talking about. Tale is that he would walk around Kalamazoo if he saw some furniture, like, abandoned, and it was like mahogany. He'd just take it. So these guys actually were cabinet makers and furniture makers. But, I mean, if you look at that work. Right here, it kind of...
Yeah, there's a little, like, a carved thing. It's carved. It's hard to see it. Let me see if I can get a picture of it. But you can see that it's carved in. It's angled.
This was a lot of work to bend this.
That's right.
And the funny thing is I was thinking about, I don't know if you guys are sentimental like I am, but when I think about that mandolin, 1911, what was going on? There was no radio. Only thing there was telegraph and newspaper. So these guys are sitting in a place with no air conditioning, probably not even a fan. And so what are they talking about? Like sitting there, well, Clem, you know, my daughter's getting married. Or I mean, Kalamazoo was not a major city then. So you just wonder what the conversation was. I mean, people talk to each other. They're talking about the farm report. Are they talking about typhoid or
going fishing.
And so you just imagine these guys, like woodworkers, sitting in the real hot, just sitting there carving. Also, when you think about this, Tal Farlow, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Howard Roberts.
That's right.
So it does carry on, doesn't it?
And that's back then. Before they were born.
Oh, yeah. Before their parents were born. Yeah,
no, it's amazing. The quality of those instruments are just mind-boggling. Well,
this is over 100 years old. If this is a 1920. Mm-hmm. So it's built to last. I mean, you could clean that up and play it. It's playable.
Well, oh, it is totally playable. But that buzz on the thing.
Yeah.
See, but I kept the original frets in it. I figured,
why not?
I don't want to mess.
But like the original frets. Frank's point, very briefly, that through line that you're talking about in terms of the initial quality carries through, and we're going to see it in a big way today in today's instruments as well. It's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even the quality of like this guitar, this was the next step.
Right.
The smaller, this is a smaller body than the standard L5 that you see now.
So this is a Sweet 16.
Like a 175.
Right. We commissioned this custom with all the features and benefits that the Style O had, and then that Orville carried on when Lloyd Lohr came on board in making the first Sweet 16. So this guitar has a lot of that and a few new ideas. So what we did, we used all the timbers.
That wood.
A lot of people have seen this already. We showed this.
That is a beautiful piece of wood.
Look, and it's violin tap tuned. Pete Farmer was the luthier at Heritage. We commissioned this room. This was inlay work was done through, this was Orville's own handwritten signature from Chris.
Dave Nichols.
Does that smokestack still?
It's right.
Still there?
Absolutely.
It's still there.
Does it say Gibson?
It's Gibson, but see, in my version, and I actually traced the Gibson smokestack, Kalamazoo, that's Orville's handwriting of Kalamazoo.
Right?
And then Chelsea did the etching.
Chelsea Clark.
And then the fiddleback maple and all, and then we used the open back keys again to be, historic, but these are shallow.
It's amazing.
And again, Orville's signature in the word Kalamazoo.
And then just to explain to our audience that are not familiar, Heritage was the group of luthiers that used to work for Gibson when Gibson moved to Nashville, Nashville. Some of them stayed up at the original plant, and that the original plant, these guys were made, they developed Heritage guitars, which were basically like the early Gibsons. So this was made in the plant by the original luthiers for Gibson at that time.
How far back did some of those luthiers go? To the 50s?
60 years. 60 plus years.
The last
couple of them.
Really?
Right.
Probably your Explorer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask you, why did they leave Kalamazoo? Whose idea was that?
That was Marty Locke's idea to leave. And it was, again, that's where you have governance versus manufacturing. And because the 225 Parsons Street factory was so old,
is that gone? They're still there.
No, they're still there. It's undergone
but
a
was
lot
that,
of
was that Merlin or CM Chicago Musical Instruments at that time when they moved? Was it they were owned by somebody else?
Well, by that time Marty Locke was in that Norland.
Yeah.
And so
that was not a great period.
Remember during the 70s is when they started the Nashville factory, and that's when Les Pauls and solid bodies were dominating the market. So guitars like this, were not dominant, so they felt they needed to go modern, and that's what that happened. So they didn't keep Kalamazoo. Even though we were selling these guitars, I was there at that time, and we sold plenty of L5s.
There's like a club of L5s.
No, these are beautiful. I mean,
so this has it. I mean, it has the magic that you just heard.
Look how clean it is. It's a real jazz box.
It plays like a dream. That neck is to die for.
The sound.
And in the 20s,
there you go.
Until I think it was until about the late 30s or 40s, there were no pickups. Right. That's what you would use in an orchestra.
Now, what is the Gibson Citation? I saw those in the book.
That was their top of the line, complete violin construction, tap tuned, even varnish finish.
Is it really good guitar?
Oh yeah, it was their top.
I never saw anyone play one. I saw people collect them.
They didn't make that many of them.
They're very rare.
Because that book, that Max Yasuda book, there's a ton of them.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. There are most of them are in there. And our good friend Mike Elliott owned number 15, and that had a little extra on it than the rest of it.
They're beautiful. Yeah. I never saw anybody play one out.
Yeah. I've seen a picture of it, but that's about it. Let's go ahead and grab since we're looking at the O style, this construction of this mandolin, and this is even older. This is over 100 years old. Yeah, this mandolin is amazing. I'll let you explain this one.
Well, I mean, just the care. I don't know what this would cost. I mean, there's old pictures of Priscilla Dean, the old actress, playing one from in their advertising. But this is the black, and the pickguard is inlaid. And the tuner keys are inlaid, and this is a pretty fancy one. I mean, I'm not, still sounds pretty good, and I'm not a mandolin player, but you know what?
It projects.
It just looked good.
It's got it.
And I said, you know what? I mean, there's going to come a point when you're not going to see these around.
That's
anymore.
Right.
They'll all be in collections.
Greg, can you pluck a couple of things just so I can get in?
Look how it resonates.
That thing cuts.
They just cut through, and that was the idea.
Yeah.
For bluegrass.
But I love the idea of Orville's face and
right.
sound hole.
Yes.
Right, his label, but this is the scroll. Now, this is called the three-point.
Yeah.
And it has the smaller scroll.
Show it up to the camera. So there's this point, that point, and this point down here.
And then after this point went away, and the scroll became larger in the F5 version. But this is the magic, and this is the same construction, just like a violin.
I mean, it's really projects.
It's the ebony finish, and then.
But look at the back,
that curly maple.
I mean, whoever had this, I mean, I think
took
people.
Great care of it.
Now they have things that are road worn and stuff. I think in those days people took care of their instruments the best they could.
And they were prized possessions for.
Well, it's like anything
people.
In those days. People, I remember your grandparents. They took care of their stuff.
And it was built to last.
It was built to
last.
There
it is, 100 plus years old.
I mean, I've been playing professionally for 54 years in rock bands, and they have these road-worn guitars. I've never seen a guitar like that.
Yeah.
If you did the same on fire.
I think that you should wear it out yourself.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's part of it. I mean, it's painful, that first ding.
Yeah.
Any new guitar, that's painful.
But I remember all the guitars I've had, because we played in small places in the 60s. It was always like the cymbal. That's why the
headstock.
Always but little
beautiful
dings.
Condition and just gorgeous, feels great.
And the case on this, the case on this. I mean, they don't make them like this. It just it's like an open hatchback. It just kind of.
I love this case.
Opens up. Yeah.
I have an old mandolin that's a double scroll. I don't know. There's nothing.
They used to play that Levon Helm and the band used to play.
It's a double scroll. It's not a Gibson. I don't know what it is, but it's and it's black and it's like it's carved both sides.
Could be a Ditson.
But it has a similar type of case like that opens up in the back like that. And it's inlaid, isn't it?
Wow.
Projects.
I mean, it actually projects more than the. And I also have a harp guitar, which I wasn't going to bring. It's big. And I got to tell you, I can play the guitar, the harp. Forget it. It's like, you know, when you see those, what was the guy's name that worked for Gibson for 50 years, the Italian guy? He was there for
Belson, Julius Belson?
Yeah, he was a Paisan. But he was there like 40 years. He started with Louis Lore and went all the way up. But the McCarty era was a good era. He was a real inventive guy.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you think? Is this a Lloyd Lohr?
No. But
it was under his watch. We believe from the serial number and the research that we had, because we've just seen the guitar today for the first time. But what we think is this was under his watch, because the L5 Suite 16
24
It was 1923 came out. From 23 to 24 was the banner year of the L5 Lloyd Lohr. So this was built under that time, so it could have been played, inspected, or even watched over by that.
But is there ever a Lloyd Lohr style O, is it whatever? Because I know he's definitely the F5 and the...
The F5, right, and the F and the L5s.
Well, he was, you know, because he was a mandolin player and he had the, you know, mandolin orchestra, that's what he was known for. But I really, truly believe that because he was there and he was a part of the quality control, you know, of the mandolins, you have a competitive spirit in any company when you have somebody like Lloyd Lohr who brings everyone to the top of their game. Because they all, so whoever is inspecting, you know, the guitars is also going to be elevated in how they evaluate these instruments.
Pride in there,
and, everyone takes more pride when you have somebody like Lloyd Lohr in the instrument. But, you know, I wanted to kind of like backtrack a bit, you know, talking about the reason for the carving of the top and the back. There was a very practical reason why Orville did that. He did that, and he obtained that patent in 1890. Well, he applied in 1894. He applied for that, and I believe that because he was a stage performer, he performed for, you know, by that time almost two decades.
What did he play?
He played the guitar, harp guitar, mandolin. If it had strings, he played it, and I believe he also played piano.
And he was violin at first. That's what,
and violin.
That's probably his influence.
He made
violin.
So when you think about, you know, there wasn't, you know, this great PA system, amplification in these theaters. So it had to project, and I think the healthy part of his ego, because he was known as a superior player in Michigan, and because he wanted to hear him above the other instruments. I mean, and he came from a background where his brother was a, you know, they worked with woodworkers, and I think, you know, they...
Wheelwright.
You know, so bending of the wood, carving, you know, he was familiar with that. And having that musical ability innate in him, he, you know, put all the pieces together in his head. And it wasn't like one day, boom, he just did it. I think there was a lot of experimentation he did to come up with the idea of carving the top and the back. But that's, he got more more projection out of that style of an instrument than he would have with a just a flat top.
Where's this lyre?
There are first it was noted that there was one of them, but then three have been found.
And he made these.
He made those. Yes. And I believe one of those. I believe Gibson does have one of those, but
I don't know how you play a lyre. Yeah. But I'll tell you, if you want to see someone play a harp guitar, go on YouTube and watch Eddie Peabody. It's actually spectacular. He goes from the banjo. He goes to the harp guitar, he goes to the mandolin and guitar. And he's just playing this one song because, you know, he was a showman, Eddie Peabody. And because I always wonder, I've never heard a record of the harp guitar audience, orchestra. I think there was four harp guitars. There was mandolas, mandolins, mandocellas.
There was a harp, a giant one, too. There was a big one, like a bass one.
Bass style.
Oh, that's called the...
The mando bass?
Mando bass.
A mando bass or mandocello.
Yeah, it's the mandocello looks like a big version of that.
Yeah.
So you got the mandola, the mandolin, the mandocello, and then you had the harp guitar, and then you had the...
Oh, yeah.
The big one.
Can you imagine what that must have sounded like? Probably amazing.
Greg Miner's book, I wish I would have brought it, about the, brief history of the harp guitar. I highly recommend it.
We'll just have to bring Greg back with the book.
Does he play?
He does play. Yeah. But
it's not the most comfortable thing to play, I must say. It's kind of, you're down here and it's like,
I've had a few guests on the show that are, Don Alder uses the harp
guitar. Michael Hedges used to play very well.
Muriel Anderson is a very big harp guitar. She has a custom classical one.
Yeah. I think the closest thing you'll find to a mandolin orchestra is Dave Appelin. Mm. Dave Appelin was just probably one of the greatest mandolin players I've ever saw. Mm. He was a guy who came over around the turn of the century, and he was a show, Claudeville, like, you know, showman. and he had like mandolins, and he would just do, and his stuff is out there, APPOLIN, Dave Appolin. It's amazing to watch it. And there's stuff of him on, like, YouTube. So now I want to sing this, play this thing. And, I mean, it's lightning fast. He's playing, like, an F5. Oh, no, it's
amazing.
It's like Jimmy Bryant on mandolin.
Yeah. They were popular. I mean, those they made a lot of money selling the
mandolins. Mandolins were really popular.
So one of the things that I just really think is quite amazing is that because of all of this, you know, Orville started it. And this weekend, you know, it being the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, you know, Orville has been, his instruments have been a part of every important music.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not just the genres, but the events and the cultural changes in our society in America. And,
oh, God, look at this. With the side.
Sorry, when you people start handing guitars off, everybody's like, "Oh,
You know what? Now is a good time for Tom come in.
Tom bought one of these after he saw one of these in Nashville.
What we're going to do now? These are the guitars that we're very grateful for Gibson letting us borrow these to show on the show. These are a couple of the models to kind of get an idea of where Gibson's going.
I love what they're doing with the sideway tremolo.
Yeah, that cool?
It flips up so you can move.
Yeah, well, it's actually, when you think about it, you have it
sideways,
here.
Yeah.
Go ahead and hear the guitar.
Right. It's kind of like... What's?
You can go sideways with it, too.
Yeah. Now, this is exactly like the one that I bought. And,
okay.
I can tell you the quality of these new SGs and Les Paul standards is easily up to the quality, or at least approaching it, of the golden era in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. They're using modern technology, but they're using the same people skills and the same positive work attitudes to build and recreate these guitars that are part of what's called the original collection.
Look at the finish.
So Gibson's making three separate collections now, the original, the modern, and the custom.
This is beautiful.
And
they're
terrific, and they're priced very reasonably. They're made in Nashville in the Gibson USA factory, all sourced from American parts and woods, and no more rich light fretboards. Rosewood, real ebony.
Yeah. I always thought this was a beautiful, beautiful design. Always. And now, is that a Nashville bridge?
No, this is the ABR1.
ABR1.
So they're using the ABR1. This has burst buckers in it.
Which are nice. Yeah.
Which is
Explain a little bit now. So the design of the neck and the woods and the material is the vintage. It's
exactly.
Like the old school.
This is,
now, what's the new things that they're doing?
Okay, what is new on this is that they're using a tried and true part, the ABR1, which is slotted right into the body. Like an anchor, a stud and anchor, and it goes to screw it in. Then, of course, revisiting the sideways vibrola.
Yeah, they remade that.
Then the 61 pickups, the burst bucker style. And then, of course, the fretwork is absolutely.
So the burst bucker is a little hotter than a PAF.
Right.
Okay, so it has a little more bite to
it. But
it
still has a Lenico, too, and it has the tone. The sound.
So the electronics?
The electronics are 500K pots with the orange drops in it. So that's the moderate part. So that's a modern cap that sounds very warm.
My guitar player in the 60s had one.
I use them in a lot. And, of course, the old-style tuners.
Oh, yeah, the Clisson.
But they're very, very smooth.
Now, let me ask you, do they make the other tailpiece, like the with the lyre, the vibrola one? Do they make that one as well?
They still make the
the vibrola, the Gibson vibrola.
The maestro style, and then the Bixby, so you can get all three tails on this.
Right.
Or
and
you
then
can get a stop.
You were going to mention the nut.
I was just going to say the nut on this. Now, usually it would be bone, but they did use nylon for a bit, but this one is Graftec. So this is your high-tech part. So this is a really...
Has more mass than the
here's me in my bedroom.
Plastic.
58 Les
Paul. Oh, wow. You get it up on the...
Well, I don't know if you can see it, but that's me.
We'll have to post that on the website afterwards.
The other thing that Tom was talking about, newer technology, is this has got all the same specifications, all the mahogany and the neck width and the scale, everything is the same, but it's 1 in 11 at the nut. And that was, that is a big thing, because the 61s, they were a little thinner. They were even 1 5/8 in some cases.
So this is a little wider.
This is a little wider, so you can actually play into the first position here.
There was only one ever thing that the only rap against this was this. Sometimes if it fell.
You break them, a lot of cracks.
But, you know, I mean, Todd Rundgren, I mean, Clapton used them. A lot of people used them.
The fool guitar was mentioned.
The SGs.
Carlos Santana, Joe McDonald, Jerry Garcia.
Angus Young.
Yeah.
Now let's switch to the other real fast.
I cringe because I think over a period of like 5 years, Townsend destroyed like 1,100 of those.
I was going to say juniors or specials.
How many he played?
And every one of those were golden era.
You know, I asked them, there's a place called Electric Factory in Philadelphia, and they were there. They played the whole Tommy album. This is 1969, right after Woodstock. And I had had a Rickenbacker. I did a wired Rickenbacker. I said, Pete, what do you think of Rickenbacker? He goes, I broke enough of them, haven't I?
Yeah.
But he used them. He used Rickenbackers like for the feedback and all.
He used them, and yeah. But the SG is iconic for especially Woodstock.
This is that big neck.
Yeah, this is a 50 C shaped neck.
This is cool. I have big hands, but I like the little slimmer neck.
The 60s stuff.
And they make a 60s as well.
But this, to me, is one of the most beautiful guitars. I think the Les Paul is one, actually, one of the most beautiful sunburst.
Yes, that is a beautiful guitar, and it's reasonable. That's not going to be a down payment on your home.
What does that SG go for by retail?
I'd like to just say, you know, go to Gibson.com and check them out there for pricing and things.
Yeah, it's on there. I think that's under $2,000. Yeah.
Is it really? I play Les Paul. I mean, I have
retail, and that's retail.
I have seven of them, so I mean, I play them, and I have an Explorer, of course, a new one, but I made it look old just to remind me of the stupidity not to get rid of it.
Is yours a Carina? The new one, Carina?
No, my original one was not Carina.
Really?
It was heavy. Yeah, the original one I had.
Because I that's all I had seen of the early ones. But let me ask you this real quick as a tangent. What's your favorite guitar?
Electric or acoustic?
Any.
God almighty. That's a hard question. I say my Martin D41. I don't want to say, but Gibson wise, I would say probably my black Les Paul Cuspin or the red one like George Harrison had. I have one like that.
Even more than your original one?
Oh, no.
Because that's a lot of history there.
The original one is history. And that's why I really. You know, you feel bad. I mean, I really feel bad I got rid of it. But I have the original Gibson J50 my mother bought me in 1965. 63, I still have that. Now, if you say my
good
favorite guitar,
good.
It would be hard for me, Tom, to get rid of that because that's a lot of history. And it's not my greatest guitar. I mean, I love my Everly Brothers. I have an Everly Brothers, which to me was
those
cool.
Are nice.
And I have J200s because, you know, the original Everly's was a J200.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I have one that's, what's his name, the guy that does the refinishing for Gibson? Tom? The guy, his finish.
Tom Murphy.
Oh. Tom Murphy did the refinishing on that Super 400. So he did do that finish on there. So, and now he can't touch him. He did it to me for like $350.
Yeah.
So
that's
yeah. No, Tom that's Murphy. Great.
So, Tom, I would just like to ask you, can you like just give us a little bit of insight into the SG and the Les Paul as we have them today versus when they were first popular?
I really can, and if I can have about 5 minutes, I think we can cover a lot of ground.
You got it.
When you look at these guitars and hold them and play them today, what they feel like and sound like to a considerable degree is what the original vintage guitars were like when they were new. And they have accomplished this through a combination of advanced manufacturing techniques like Greg mentioned. using CAD-CAM technology and other things to make them very consistent. But the most important element are the people creating them and making them and the management that's working with them. What I have seen is the biggest difference now is the same as it was 35 years ago when I went to the factory in 84 to interview Julius Belson and Ted McCarty. We got to visit with the old employees that were retired and with Ted and Julius, and we got a sense of the pride they had in their work and the cooperation and innovation that they were continually striving for. The new Gibson management and the staff are in this together, and I'm telling you, they're making the best quality instruments I think they've made out of the chute in a long, long time. I'm very excited about them and very proud of them, too.
I agree with you, Tom. The VOS Les Pauls are amazing. Vintage original specs, really good. I mean, this is as good as good. This
when I was at January NAMM, and I played every neck. I tried every neck, and they were all great. Tom, what was the big focus of Gibson at Nashville NAMM, Summer NAMM? What did you see? Mainly Les Pauls and SGs, or was there anything else that they were? What did you see as a direction for them?
Well, what I saw was the rollout of the three collections. You know, the original collection, like what Greg's holding now, and the other, and the SG, the modern collection, which are modernized versions of these guitars with different neck profiles, smaller heels, et cetera, et cetera. And then the custom shop, which was all 59 reissue Les Pauls, the 60th anniversary ones.
Mm-hmm.
What's coming is a reintroduction of the archtop guitars like the Super 400 and the L5 and so on, but that's about a year or so away as they gear up for that and get more funding. So that's the three collections that are on the ground right now. And the quality control and the pride in workmanship and all of them is amazing.
Okay. What about the anything on the ES and the flat tops?
The flat tops are being made currently in Bozeman, and they're extremely, extremely nice. And they're adding some new, less expensive models for folks to get into a Gibson flat top at a reasonable price. The ESs they're currently making in Gibson USA, and they're part of the original collection, but they'll be making some really, really nice ones in the custom shop in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, talking about the flat top, I just want to kind of draw your bring your attention to the montage for tonight's show with the Gibson that has the headstock with 125. It's the J2 200. And that was Gibson did that and debuted that at January NAMM in honor of the 125th year of the company since Orville applied for his patent and
right.
started using that name. And that headstock in the fretboard is inlaid with gold, diamonds, and emeralds. The back has down the middle of the back has Orville's cameo inlaid, and it is absolutely stunning. It was a one-off, so our OHG Sweet 16 and then the Gibson 125 anniversary,
yeah.
Those are both one-offs. That
amazing.
Is that is in the hands of a private collector, but check out, you know, Gibson's website because you can get that guitar without those extra very costly.
You're talking about the J200.
The J200.
I have a bunch of them, and I got to tell you a quick story. When I first moved out there, there was a place called Blue. It was called Easy Street or something. Guy owned. He goes, yeah. I was talking to Nick Lucas. I goes, what? What do you mean you were talking to?
Yeah,
he's a friend of mine. I go, you got to bring him to the club. So I'm sitting there. He's an old Italian guy from Newark. I go, this is Nick Lucas. So I'm sitting there talking to him. He's got the hat on. He's very well dressed. You know, he's listening to this rock band. I'm sitting with Nick Lucas. And I said, Nick, Mr. Lucas, call me Nick, kid. You know, one of those guys. I said, how many guitars do you have? He said, two. That's it. They made his guitar, especially for him. It's real deep. And if you see him, he only had two. One was the real ornate one he played, and then he had another one. And I said, what do you do now? He goes, I play condos once in a while. I mean, but he was a great guitar player. I mean, he really was a good guitar player.
Sure.
And it's a weird guitar. It's cool looking. It's not that easy. It's okay. It's not, you know, it's not like, and the J200, let me tell you a story about that. Joe Esposito was a friend of mine who was Elvis's best friend. I said, how many J200s does Elvis have? He said, I think two. He bought it at the local guitar store, and the first time you see it is in the movie Loving You, when he opens the case with Elizabeth Scott, and she bought it for him. It was the blonde J200. And I have a blonde J200 that I use a lot. They're hit and miss. Sometimes they're horsey, and sometimes they're... Norm has the greatest one I've ever seen in my life. It's an original with rosewood sides in the back.
Oh, wow.
With a horseshoe. It's sick. I think you've seen that, Tom. Norm has that J200. It's like, it's really expensive, but it's like, looks like it's never been played.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't realize some of the guitars that were Gibsons. Like, for example, I remember seeing James Taylor, and I always saw him use a Martin, but Fire and Rain was a
J50.
Yeah.
The same exact guitar I have. With it, but his had no pickguard,
and that,
I
saw the tone of that thing is to die for.
Yeah, the hands, but he I thought he played that for a long time. Then he went to the Olsen, I think, later, whatever it's called.
Yeah,
but he played that J50 for a long time, and he sounded great.
But that was the guitar. That was the guitar on Fire and Rain.
What do you think is the most beautiful? I think if you get a real red Hummingbird, is beautiful.
Those are nice.
When I mean they fade though, the red fades, doesn't it?
Faded cherry.
Faded cherry, but when it's that real bright red with the yellow, it is a good-looking guitar.
Yeah.
More so than the Dub. The Dub's a little horsey with that big bridge and stuff like that. But
I don't know, the J50, the J45, those guitars, they were great.
They're iconic guitars, just any way you look at them.
And the Epiphone ones that look like a J50, Norm said that's the sleeper guitar. That's the one people haven't quite, they're almost there. That's what Paul McCartney played, remember, on Yesterday.
Yeah.
What was it called? A country, a western, or something like that. Epiphone.
Well, the one they used in the movie was the electric, the D180E or something like that.
160E.
Yeah.
That was shoulder.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean with John Lennon? Those, and they were terrible sounding. I had one, the J160.
It sounded good on the record.
No, it sounded good, but it's actually a plywood top.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I guess it's just, but they're cool looking. But now the Gibson's making them with spruce top.
Yeah.
That's right. I might get one again. There's just
I think you should.
Because it's John Lennon. It's John has it.
Well, they actually have a John Lennon signature model of that guitar.
The Epiphone? Yeah.
Of the J160.
460E. Yeah.
They actually have one. There is a artist one. It's around.
I bought the Epiphone one at one point. I thought it was being cool.
Did you get a Casino?
No, I got the J160 Epiphone that John Lennon's like name on it. It never quite cut the mustard.
Because that was another one of his iconic guitars. Oh, yeah. The Epiphone Casino that he shaved the finish off.
Right.
And he also shaved the finish off the J160, remember?
Yeah.
When he's doing the thing in Give Peace a Chance. He was into taking finishes off.
He liked it.
How about guys go, hey man, they have an old Les Paul. I don't like that gold, man. I'll strip it. Oh God.
Unfortunately, some of those had curly maple under them because they used that wood because the Les Pauls were popular. They couldn't use them for.
I think maybe one of the most beautiful guitars in the world was the Gibson Black Beauty Les Paul.
Oh yeah.
The Cousin really is a good looking guitar.
It's the most popular. The Black Beauty is definitely iconic.
And the one with the Al Nico pickup and the P90. It's a weird sounding one, but it's really cool.
It's all mahogany.
Is that what it is?
It's all mahogany, so it's dark, and it's got that.
That's what Neil Young uses. Right. Is that guitar with the Charlie Christian in it.
But it's just a cool guitar.
Neil Young, Jim Messina told me about the guitar. He gave it to Neil Young because he couldn't keep it in tune. It's a Frankenstein guitar. It's got a Firebird pickup and a dog ear pickup in the back.
Uh-huh.
It's really funky. It's like held together.
Yeah, we had somebody want to order one like that once.
Really?
Yeah.
It works for Neil, though. Yeah, you know,
he loves it.
It was hard to quote.
He's had that guitar. I saw him with that guitar in 1969 with Crazy Horse at the Electric Factory. He's had that guitar over 50 years.
He used it in Buffalo Springfield, too.
He uses it all the time. He likes that.
That's part of him now.
And the Gretches. That you, yeah. The, I don't know. The Gretsch is, some of them are beautiful guitars, but ain't a Gibson. Close in some ways, but
no cigar. Yeah.
Yeah. The white, I have a white Falcon. It is a beautiful guitar.
Well, the Beatle things, you know, it has a sound to it. I had a country gentleman during those days, yeah. So we did Beatles, and that was perfect.
I had a big pad on the back.
I have a Nashville.
Yeah. Got into jazz, it was like, that doesn't work. You got to have a Gibson.
But Chet made it work. I don't know if why. Sure. Of course, well, he sponsored
it. He played all sorts of. But now, what's been improved on this guitar? Let's go through this guitar.
Okay, well, first of all, what they're doing they're doing that same thing they did on the SG. They're using 500K pots with orange drops. So that's the modern capacitor.
What's that mean?
The orange capacitor.
It's a capacitor.
Is it film brighter? Capacitor.
It's warmer and hotter.
Okay.
It gives it nice warm. It takes the highs down, brings the mids
nice.
Up.
Nice.
But doesn't, it's not muddy. I use them in most of my jazz guitars.
Okay.
We got burst buckers again, a 1 and a 2. The ABR1, like we talked about earlier, but this is an aluminum bridge. This is a resonant metal. It's not pot metal. So it rings. And, of course, curly maple again, a 2-piece top on mahogany body. Everything is the same specs, 17 degrees again, 1 11/16, and then the nut is Graftech again. So it's not nylon and it's not foam.
Now, what's the difference between these pickups and the SG's pickups?
Those are tweaked 61 style, so those are going to be a bit hotter because that guitar is all mahogany, so it has a lot of warm tonalities to it. The Les Paul has a maple top, so that gives it brilliance and sustain against the mahogany body. So this is brilliance and sustain and warm, rich tonalities, where the SG is all warm, rich tonalities.
But those pickups are hotter than these?
Right. There's a little brighter, a little edge, so you get a little more.
It's really well done.
Right. And the scales are the same. They're both 24 and 3/4, 1 11/16.
Mm-hmm. Old style.
Right. And the color. You've got your faded cherry. See, this is the color. Yeah. This is the look.
You know, something else you might mention about the Les Paul standard there is that these are now at a uniform weight of about 8 pounds.
That's right.
Which is about at least a pound and a half lighter than the original vintage ones.
That's right.
And they're much more consistent in terms of their build quality and dimensions. The other thing is they do get loud. When you turn them up, they start humming and jumping just like the SGs, and their tonality mm-hmm. just jumps out at you. They're really something.
This is really a nice guitar. I mean, and you're right, Tom, it is a lot lighter. I mean, I'm done at my age, I'm done to the days with the 10-pound Les Paul, you know.
Yeah, my Les Paul's heavy.
Guys go, well, it sounds good. I said, I don't care how good it sounds. Like 11 pounds.
It's
like carrying an M1 Grand.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. I told you guys we'd go by fast. Tom, real quick, let me Tom, on the phone, anything new happening with you, a new book, anything?
I'm still writing on my book about, it's a biography of John Monteleone, and it's coming along nicely. He keeps building more and more of the most beautiful guitars you'll ever see or play, archtops, of course, and he's doing the most amazing work of anyone that's ever created an archtop guitar in these modern times. They've become artistic pieces as well as unbelievable instruments. And he's humble about it, but he keeps working and creating. And I'm having a hard time keeping up with him, but we'll get there.
Okay. And then, Frank, what's going on with you?
Well, what's going on with me? There's a movie about me called Stallone Frank, that is. And it's a major documentary. I know, it's crazy. But everyone's in it, Bon Jovi, Hall & Oates, Guns N' Roses,
cool.
My brother, Arnold. And it was voted to open the Burbank International Film Festival. So now we're on the road, we're talking with Netflix and all. It's actually, I was kind of surprised. I mean, I've sat there, there's people from 1965, my first band in it. And I'm very,
very
proud
cool.
of it. And I'm still doing concerts, so. All over the place.
Oh, that is awesome.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Tom.
And then Sharon and Greg. Give us a quick update on what you're doing.
Okay, well, we're moving along with the book and documentary, and there was I needed a third element because my heart is set on a movie of Orville H. Gibson, and so I now have the beginning of the movie. I've had the body of work for the movie, but I am, I'll just give you a sneak idea. It involves one of my favorite movie genres is time travel, and then it goes into a biopic. Now we have nothing. We don't even have a script yet. It's just all of my ideas.
Yeah.
And so, but now I've got the three projects that are now really solidly tied together. So I am really excited because I think things are just going to move very, very quickly. And I really want to thank all the people who really support us in my crazy ideas. and Tom is one of those people. And if you want, I don't post a lot on my Orville Remembered Facebook page or my 225 Parsons Kalamazoo page because I have so much new material that I don't want to put it out there on the internet yet because I have a lot of information that's never been published before and that will change history. It will change Orville's history. It will give us a new respect for him and it will really elevate him to his proper place in history. It'll put him up there with C.F. Martin.
Write a bio on him.
I've got it.
This is pretty good. This is fun.
We're working on it, and that was one of my inspirations.
Can you find any more pictures on him?
Real quick, www.vanhoosvintage.com is Dr. Tom's site. Check it out. www.frankstallone.com. You can find out more about Frank and his collection, and I'm hoping to have him back on soon. Because we need to talk to you just about your guitar playing. And Greg is www.gregdelordoguitar.com. You can find out more what Greg's doing and more about this. And then Facebook is the Orville H. Gibson Remembered site on Facebook. You can check that out. I want to thank all you guys. It was great to have you on. Everybody stay tuned. We're going to be doing more on Gibson. This is an ongoing series of stuff with Orville and also the Gibson guitars. We're going to try to cover all the different models and stuff. And I want to thank Doug and Ron for helping me. And we will see you next week. Thank you so much. And go ahead, Tom.
No, that was me.
Right.
I just want to, again, a shout out. Yeah. Thank you to the new Gibson brands, and their website is Gibson.com. Everyone should go and check them out.
Gibson.com, that's right. Okay, everybody, thank you so much. Tom, stay on the line after we're done. We'll talk to you real quick before we hang up. And thank you again, Frank, for being on the
pleasure.
Everybody have a great week.
Thank you.